Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and, of course, spirituality. And we're going to continue from last week's show in the variations in life, those things that make life different, and how life becomes distinctly something growingly new as it is changing within our world. It's very important to understand that this show is presenting a metaphysics viewpoint on this, not just evolutionary. And I say just because evolution has its place in some respects, but also there is spirit and there is a plan about how life in general is to grow. Although life itself has to be free to make choices as well. And some of the choices made by life are made by souls that do thinking for some parts of life and help the life to gain some greater levels of understanding from this level of thought produced by the souls. Now, these are called group souls. Now, a group soul is different than an individual soul that humans might have, or something even beyond a human. But I think it's very important for us to understand that when I'm talking about group souls, I'm not talking about a group of souls. I'm talking about a soul that thinks for many individual life forms that are similar or very much in the same subspecies or species. And what we call instincts are the thoughts that these group souls generally are employing. So that's what I'm referring to. Just so you know. Yeah. And since today is volume two, I'll give you a really brief rundown on last week, which was that we started off looking at life as it develops from a partial, not even a full center, into a single center in sense, and gradually develops multiple senses, not just in this dimension of time and space, but eventually even in other dimensions of time and space, especially parts of the astral realm for life forms less than human. So this is really important to understand that this sort of thing, multiple senses with the ability to create based on information supplied through senses, is a critical element in how life differentiates itself and varies its ability to, we'll say, create more of our creator. That's what life is really about, in my opinion. It's here to help the creator to grow. And for a lot of people, that may be a new understanding. That may be something they never even heard of before. Because in many religions, as an example, God, within a religious understanding, is a being that isn't necessarily changing and is some supreme, that's the usual word I hear, supreme being that has all of itself grown to whatever infinite levels that might be. And so how could life be involved in this? And the answer I have is that God chose it to be that way, chose to reduce or limit its own mind within the universe so that life could participate in growing itself in a free fashion while it continues to grow the creator. And that's the hard thing to understand here, because for a lot of people that may go against even their religious beliefs. And I think it's also critical maybe to look at it from the standpoint that the freedom that is given to life that is less than human comes from something that most of you have heard before, evolution. Evolution allows life to be free because it allows life to be making the choices that lead it towards its own survival and growth, and eventually allows it to evolve into higher and higher life forms. this is not contrary to the thought of the Creator, in my opinion, but rather is complementary and even necessary. Now, if you disagree with me, you can give a call at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. And if you're in Canada, hi, you can call us at 888-815-9756. And if you're someplace other than that, you can always send me an email. I won't be able to get it today while I'm on the air, but sometime in the future that is coming. And I will respond to the emails I got sometimes on air the following week, or at least I'll let you know what I think if we're off air. But at any rate, please call in if you'd like to. I would love to hear from you. So, and if you don't agree with anything I'm saying, that's okay. Believe me, I'm not going to bite. But I will listen, and we can discuss. So, if you're following what I've said so far, and this is what I presented last week, then the way that life grows, at least until you reach human beings, is predominantly produced by forces that are created in the choices that each part of life makes that's different from other parts of life. And that actually produces forces, and those forces are what we call evolution. The forces are unfortunate in one respect because they tend to separate life and they tend to create a struggle. But on the other side, especially in the physical realm where we are presently living, it causes life to become differentiated a great deal more. Because in separation, there's a positive side to that. There's more variance in the way that life grows. And that comes from competition, of course, if you understand evolutionary theories. And so, interestingly, this double-edged sword of struggle and contest and you know, survival of the fittest becomes also a means of variation, particularly in the physical or etheric physical world that we live in, because in this world, energy is so difficult to contend with. It is so difficult to overcome the effects of inertia and gravity. And there is such strong levels of those things that life itself is tenuous. And so, consequently, by life differentiating and by having an encouragement to overcome these forces, it becomes tougher and stronger, and it grows God in the toughest or most difficult dimension that it would be growable in, which is this dimension, sometimes referred to as the seventh or lowest dimension of time and space. It really has two parts to it. It has an electromagnetic part called the etheric, and it has the physical part, which we're all familiar with, of course. Now, the interesting thing about that is that it allows life to become most differentiated in the most difficult place it can live within. And in all the other dimensions of time and space that are, we'll call them more developed, there's more dimensionality to them, so that they have an easier ways. There are easier ways for life to grow itself, and more complex ways as well. But in those other dimensions of time and space, life is not so struggling. There's far less forces, and life can do very much what it seeks to do through literally mostly thinking rather than taking as much action. There's a lot less need to create counter forces to just survive. That means that life also is less differentiated. Isn't that interesting? So the greatest differentiation is right where we are. And that's the thing that's so fascinating, sometimes referred to as the principles of synthesis, for those of you who have studied metaphysics. And here, synthesis is a great thing, and life is tremendously involved in this. But there's less of it as you move away from this dimension. And consequently, life becomes more homogeneous rather than heterogeneous. And it has shared similarity, but it is not as variable, as differentiated as it is here. Wow. Okay, let me continue on. and tell you more about how life varies itself within our world. After it has developed one or two senses, it starts to develop itself into a system of various informational and communicative ways within itself of, we'll say, becoming more complex. And, of course, what this means is that instead of being single-celled or even multiple cells that pretty much are on their own, it becomes a system of cells that are each doing very complex, by our standards anyway, very complex, duties within the life form. And it allows the life form to become much more creative. It allows the life form to become more active, too, interactive with its environment, and to change the environment besides just being changed by it. This is critical to understand, because the environment we're talking about is the third part of the creator's mind itself. So that part, which is so hard to change for life, especially in this dimension of time and space, gets changed as life forms become more complex. Let me give you an example, so that instead of just talking in concepts. Let's talk about me. If I was an amoeba that was just sort of floating around, and I think you can all identify with that maybe, and I was trying to live my life within, say, a little swampy area. Amoebas like swampy areas. I don't know why they do, but they do. And they can hang out there. They can hang out also in areas where there's less water, but they like having a lot of water around because it's easier for them to float around and to move around. They can live in the earth as well, similar to the way worms sometimes do. But it's important to understand that if I'm an amoeba, what I can do is relatively limited by the fact that I have extremely limited sense and I have very limited organization within my body because I'm a microbe. And microbes just don't have much going on in that respect. And so consequently, the amount that I can change my environment, the amount that I can affect the environment is very limited. And so I have a meager chance of growing at least this third part of my creator's mind, which is the physical world, which is energy itself and sometimes matter. I can change energy and matter only a very small amount by bringing in energy into me, exchanging it and changing it, and metabolizing it and giving it back out again, which makes me a real life form, by the way. That's one of the definitions that makes me alive. But besides that, besides changing me, I have a very limited chance to change much of anything else around me. Very small amount. Yeah, I could consume certain things around me and may do that, but my ability to do it is just, you know, at the minuscule level. Now, let's say that instead of being that, I was a tree. Well, a tree is a much more complex life form because as a tree, I start manufacturing oxygen. I am affecting the ground underneath me. I'm actually creating a ground that some amoebas might find comfortable to live around, and certainly bacteria do and fungi do. And also, I'm changing the chemistry in the ground. I'm changing the nitrogen levels in the soil. I'm doing amazing things, and I'm taking in light and changing it into energy, which is in the form of sugars within my system, and some complex proteins are being produced. All kinds of things are going on. I'm able to raise water and other things up my trunk and into my leaves. I'm able to do all these things at the same time changing my environment dramatically. So you can see that as we gain more senses and as we gain more system integration and complexity, the life forms are having an impact on the third part of God, God's mind, which is energy itself and matter. Matter is energy that is very condensed and that is somewhat less in movement than not, whereas energy is more in movement than it is not in movement, so we call it energy. That's all the only difference between those two facts. Energy and matter are really kind of the same thing. They're just moving at different rates. So the interesting thing about this is that life is veering itself, it is changing itself as it becomes more complex, and it is changing and growing God at the same time. Wow, I love that idea. I don't know, it just kind of gives me a little shiver or something that makes me feel like, whoa, there's so much more to understanding what life is. And of course, that's what this show is. It's why life is. So it really tells us something to think about and gives us something to think about. Now, we're going to be back in, about 2.5 minutes or so. And when we come back, I'll tell you a whole bunch more about how life varies itself and grows itself and much more than itself.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
And we're back, and this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And for those of you who might be wondering why we're not doing all of our commercials, we've actually started to run out of some of the things that we sell, so we're trying to get more in. But we still have a little bit, so give us a call if you think you need any of those things. At any rate, I also want to mention that you can email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com, just in case you would like to do that. Because I really would love to hear from you if you want to email me. thoughts@whylifeis.com. And the at is like that little at sign, you know, whatever they call that thing. I think it's that an ampersand or something else? Whatever it is. All right, so let me continue on. And guess what? I get more time to yak, too, so I can say anything I want right now because we got a little bit more time. That's good to know. Let me tell you this. When life reaches a certain stage, and I'll explain it to you better than this in a minute or two, but when life reaches a certain stage, its effect on other life and on the environment becomes greater than its effect on itself. Now, you might say, well, when is that, and how does that work? And, you know, well, it's meant to be that that's how it's supposed to happen. Now, it isn't true that it happens to all life. It happens to only life that has reached the point where it has more than half of the available senses that it could be using. And they are those senses are integrated within a system so that the life form can use the senses pretty close to about the same time. Whatever life forms reach that level tend to then, using principles in metaphysics, to be able to have a greater effect on the environment that they are living within than they do on themselves. And that's a little tidbit of, we'll say, hidden knowledge that I might have. And so, interestingly, if we go back, way back, billions of years, and we watch life develop, we see that approximately, and this is an approximation, about 300 million years ago, a lot of life was, even we could say the majority of life on Earth, was functioning in this way. If you go back 400 million years ago, the life that was functioning in this way were just the very rudimentary plants that were able to develop on land. And amazingly, even though there was a lot of fish in the sea, because fish had developed about 50, 60 million years before that, they were not having as much an impact on the planet as the plants which came later that grew outside of the oceans and on land. And so that's when it started to really start changing. But it took about another, give or take, 100 million years or so for the majority of life on the planet to actually have such a great impact on its environment to affect other life and to affect the entire world, the entire planet, more than they affected their own development. And strangely, maybe, some types of life forms barely changed. They stayed very, very similar. I'll give you an example, cockroaches. Yeah, they've gotten smaller because there's much less oxygen, and that has a direct effect on insects because they don't have lungs. They just sort of get the oxygen from around them. So the more oxygen, the bigger they get. But they haven't changed that much, and yet they have had a pretty big impact on their surroundings, and they've also lived a very long time because they've lived about 325 to 350 million years. That's a long time to be hanging around. And they've been here. But they haven't changed all that much. Actually, they are pretty similar to the way that they were almost from the get-go. So, and then also, some of you may be familiar that there's a number of early dinosaurs and lived for tens of millions of years without much change. I mean, at least a 10 million years without much change. That's a long, long time. And they did not change themselves, but they had a profound impact on their entire environment. So we can see that this is a very interesting idea, that as life forms become more complex, and as they integrate their complexity and are able to use the information from their senses pretty close to the same time, they start taking on a new dimension of affecting the environment. They start changing the environment more than they even change themselves. I don't think you'll find that in very many books on evolution, but it is true, even if you're big into the life sciences and biology, et cetera. I think you might agree with me on that if you really think about it, because I believe it to be true, and I believe it can be determined to be true by looking at the impact of various creatures on the environment. Now, there is certainly some truth in believing that even one-celled organisms, very early in our development on Earth, had a profound impact in terms of developing an atmosphere, et cetera. But that profound impact was extremely narrow because it had just like one or two changes to the environment. They were big. I mean, creating an atmosphere is pretty important, and changing certain other issues are important, but it wasn't in any way as complex or affecting other life as life forms that came much later that are much more complete. All right, so that's something to think about. Now, I tried to explain last week that life forms change by the way that energy is focused onto Earth. Only so much of certain types of energy is focused on Earth at any one time, And in the beginning, only one kind of energy, and then two, and then three, and then four, at the present time, four types out of seven types of energy are focused on the planet at the same time. And it changes. It kind of revolves around. It isn't always the same kind of energy. And what this does is it gives life forms that use that kind of energy to, in their senses and in creating themselves, a chance to grow more, while those life forms that don't use that kind of energy may die out or may also find it more of a struggle to survive, and they may differentiate more. Isn't that interesting? They actually may evolve or differentiate more because they are struggling. That's actually a principle that they're using these days in evolutionary theory. So this is all part of the creator's or God's idea of how to help life to develop more quickly. And it helps in this world because every so often life forms change. Instead of having the same old kinds of life forms, new ones are developed as new types of energy out of the seven possibilities are focused and other ones fall out of focus. We're actually having a change right now in the world because the third type of, sometimes referred to as third rate energy, which goes through our throat chakras, is becoming unfocused. It's not going to be focused on for more than another, oh, say, 15, 17, 18 years. And then what's it's being replaced with is a focus on the energy that goes through our sacral center, which is at the base of the spine. And that is going to give us a totally different, stronger sense of the sacral energy. But our sense of the throat energy, which has to do with building civilization, communications, the ability to develop extensions of ourselves using our environment, that's what the throat chakra gives us, that's going to diminish. While we're going to become more inner reflective, more spiritually balanced with the material side of existence, we're going to have a different sense that it will be stronger in us on an average. If you're living a spiritual life, this energy doesn't really matter that much because people who live spiritual lives try to develop all the senses to the highest level possible by focusing out and by creating good for others. So then it doesn't matter. But for people who are more typically, as humans are, selfish, it does affect them. And for lower forms of life, it has a dramatic effect on them because some life forms will actually go extinct and other ones will newly become developed and changed. So evolution is being driven by spiritual thought coming from sources outside of this world and ultimately leading back to the Creator, to God. That's how it's done. And it's done behind the scenes, and for most people, they don't see it. But it's why there are seven primary colors, if you look at a rainbow, and it's there's seven ways of many things happening, and that has to do with these seven ray energies. Okay, so at different times in our history, at different times in the development of Earth, there has been an emphasis considerably different than there is today on different senses in living things. Let me take an example. I like dinosaurs. I think they're kind of interesting, but dinosaurs are a third-ray type of creature. In other words, their throat chakra is the most developed part of them. And besides that, they follow the issues that the third ray tends to do, which is the development of activity and intelligence. Now, they weren't smart like we are, but their type of intelligence had to do with how they interacted with their environment. And they were one heck of creatively interacting from both their adaptability and also from changing their environment, both. They were the most successful life form ever to exist, for those of you who may not know that. About 180 or so million years, if you go back to the very earliest dinosaurs, was their lifetime of development. And, of course, they varied their life by developing to many species and subspecies. But I think it's important to understand that in general, they were still functioning very much under this very strong third ray that was continuously pushing on their type of development. Now, they weren't using the third ray the way humans do, because humans develop civilization, and to do that you have to have much higher intelligence and consciousness than dinosaurs. But they did do a lot of things that made them extremely active and pretty darn good at it. They were better at moving than any other creature before them, and maybe many since. And that made them interactively very strong in their effects on other life. They ruled, literally, the Earth. That's very important. Now, some of you might say, well, what about those super big ones that didn't move all that fast? Yeah, that's okay for them, because you can substitute mass and size for speed and agility and still be functioning under the third ray. That's one of the ways it can morph itself. And so that just still explains how and why that sort of thing took place. But that gives you an idea of how these rays change things. Right now, human beings are being tremendously affected by the fact that we are growing mentally very quickly, more so than we have at any time in the past. We also tend to be a bit more egotistical and arrogant. I'm sure that doesn't surprise some of you. Also, we're needing to balance the amount of technology and civilization that we have developed with a right use of that, and that means a spiritual balance. We've gotten a bit imbalanced in the last couple hundred years, particularly the last 100 years. And so the third ray is going out. After 650-plus years, it's been focused on Earth, developing all these great things that humans use. We now are going to be without it for a while, and the people who are most selfish are going to find it adversely affects their senses, and particularly their throat chakra the most, in all three of their bodies, not just the etheric physical, but the astral, and learning how that feeling is affected in them, and then also the mental sense. Yeah, we even have senses in our mental thinking part. So we're going to find it difficult to understand what other people are trying to communicate with us sometimes. Also, we're going to tend to be a bit more militant if we're selfish, because when you try to function in ways in which you're finding it more difficult because your sense isn't working as well, the frustration level goes up, there's more potential for anger and hostility to erupt. So that's something to consider as well. Well, at this point, I also want you to think about this, that we haven't even really got to humans yet, but we're going to in the next segment. But it is important to understand that there's a huge shift in the variation in life when you get to humanity, because we are not, unless we choose to, controlled by evolution. I know that's hard to understand, and those of you who are big into evolution might want to disagree with me on this, but we're not. We are controlled by spirit. Now, could we be controlled by evolution? Yes, but that creates some very, very bad results, bad outcomes. We've seen some of them already in this world. And it isn't something that you want to continue to do, because when human beings start being controlled by forces in nature and by the struggle to survive, with the most fittest surviving, they no longer function as humans, they function as animals. And the results are devastating, because the results are that humans quickly reduce their numbers of people alive and eventually destroy the world that they are part of. So that has a very, very serious connotation to it. And that is what we're going to go into in the next and final segment of the show. So I would like you to stand by, and we should be back in another about 2.5 or so minutes. And when we come back, we will go into that in much more.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We are back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about how life is varied and how it does this to grow more of its creator. I hope you've heard the first couple segments of the show so that you have a good or better understanding of what I'm referring to. If you'd like to call in, please do. I would love to hear from you. Last week we had a caller who actually was one of the first callers we had on the show, if not the first. And she had a chance to read one of the books I've written called Afterlife Love, and she thought it was a great book. I'll give a little plug for myself there, but I think it's important to realize that the stuff that I'm writing about, the stuff I'm teaching, is based, as I explained to her, on experience. It's also based upon growing my consciousness as much as possible. And sometimes using intuitive thought, which allows me to gain the information that has been garnered by everyone else. So that's a good thing. It isn't raining down, though, from no place. It's actually kind of coming from being of service to other people, you might say. So it's kind of like that's something that you can gain just by being of service. So it isn't like I have some magical abilities. I don't. I just have some ability to understand some things because of those factors that I just said. So, at any rate, what about humans? How do humans change the equation so radically? And the main difference is that even the most advanced life forms, let's talk about orangutans, for those of you who are familiar with them, or some other, like mountain gorillas, or some other type of elephants, too, that are really advanced in their thinking abilities for animals. These animals have developed 5 of the 7 potential senses in at least 2 of their 3 bodies. And in some cases, they've developed 2 or 3 or more of the senses in their manassas or mental body as well. This is really amazing because they are quite advanced and they aren't that much different from us in those senses in their ability to gain information. But there's a huge difference because they do not have an individual soul, so they still rely strongly on instincts, the thought of the soul that they are connected to. And even when they're not using their instincts and they're actually using their own thought, the thing that is missing is they don't have the last 2 senses that human beings have in all 3 of their bodies. And those senses are the understanding of their own creator and understanding how to create more of their creator in themselves and in others. Those are the 2 senses that are missing in all animals. Now, there is a slight amount of these senses that can be developed in animals that are very closely associated with the human being. We call them pets, and that are very developed already in themselves, such as dogs and cats, maybe horses. But the point is that only the very, very slightest amount of the sense is developed in them. It's not a full capability. No animal that I know of is seeking to understand and create more of God. I've never met one. Now, if you know of one, I would love to meet that animal because that would be a really amazing animal. because it would be basically a crossover into being human. Human beings do this. They do it all the time, and they do it cross-segment in every society that has ever been discovered. That doesn't mean every human being uses these senses, and some claim to not use them or choose to not use them. And as a result, they don't necessarily understand their creator or want to create more of their creator. Some of them want to do the opposite. But nonetheless, they are capable, if they are human, of doing that if they chose to. Remember, we can choose to use a sense or not use a sense. We can choose to be conscious in certain ways or not be conscious. We can choose to be loving, which is the same as saying conscious, in whatever way we like. So this is very important. We can actually love our own creator. Animals can love each other. They can even love animals that they can understand similar to themselves and even human beings. But they can't love their creator because they can't understand what that is. Very important difference. Now, how does that change human beings overall? Well, when you add these two other senses, something magical happens. First of all, it allows us to have an individual soul. It does so because we now recognize that the soul and we, in part, are one, because the soul is sort of like a lower level form of God. And it wouldn't do us any good to have an individual soul if we couldn't recognize that soul as being us, you see. And so that's the good news, is that we have that capability, and we recognize it in general. Not everybody does. I've known people who swear there's no such thing and it's a bunch of nonsense, etc. But I also disagree with them, of course. So the interesting part about this is by having an individual soul, one that we can identify with, we gain continually through an interaction with that soul and its alter ego part, which is sort of like a super soul that is connected to it. It's a little complicated, and I don't think it's necessary to really go into that tonight. But the important thing is, we call it just a soul. We are able to gain through our soul a much more complicated understanding of our world. It helps us to think in terms of concepts and rather than just preconceived understandings of our world, which mostly comes through instincts in lower forms of life. So we can get out of preconceived understandings, and we can get new conceptions, create new conceptions, and become extremely inventive and become extremely creative of our world and environment. It's the reason that although some primates are 98.5 or 98.75 of the genome of a human being, they have yet to manufacture any spaceships. They haven't made even some simple devices like sailing ships or roller skates, and in many cases, they haven't even gone beyond being able to use a stick or a rock. Now, if you think about that, and you say to yourself, wow, that's true, then you can start seeing how human beings are able to do this. Now, it is true, a bird can build a nest, but that's a preconceived understanding. But you see, the same bird builds the same nest all the time. I haven't seen any birds building skyscrapers. And that's the difference. I'm not promoting skyscrapers. I'm just saying that we can do that and birds can't. And it's because we have individual souls. It's because we have seven senses instead of five and three or more bodies. And we also are able to integrate these senses together at a much greater level of consciousness. It's consciousness that is inclusiveness, and it brings together things. So our consciousness, being connected to these senses, allows us to integrate them together and turn them into something much more sophisticated than any animal can do. Animals can bring them together sometimes under certain circumstances, but in a very limited way. We can do it in amazingly complex ways. And as complex as we can bring our senses together, we can create new concepts, new ways of using and interrelating our environment and making it extensions of ourselves. That's what civilization is. It's an extension of who and what we are, including our own senses. And we can do this. We can do it because we are mimicking the most important thing that I can possibly think of. We are the closest. We are the actual, we'll call it, reflection of our own creator. The creator itself has seven senses. They are dimensions of time and space. And we are becoming that creator. We are born closer to being that creator by far than any animal. And we are not, in an evolutionary sense, some extension of a primate. Although the genomes may look very similar, the way that the senses work, which is presently not very well understood in traditional science, makes us uniquely different, vastly different, from any animal or lower life form in general. This is what is so important to understand about human beings, because the variation in life, when you reach the human level, takes on a completely different quality. It takes on the quality of the creator itself, but, especially in, while we're physically alive, with a lot of warts and other problems, illusions. Because although we have these senses, they don't work very well until at least three out of the seven dimensions of time and space are incorporated into one super sense, making us master of those three little worlds and allowing us to escape the illusions of them and to really create ourselves into our creator accurately. We do so all the time in bits and pieces, but we don't do so in very accurate ways. As a matter of fact, we are far more mistaken in the way we do it than we are correct. The results are that we create forces in our life not too different from the way animals live, and we produce a lot of destructive elements. We shorten the time we live, and we destroy the senses we're using. These are not good outcomes. But unfortunately, it's necessary in order for us to be free instead of preconceived, in order for us to be self-created rather than created by something else and we're just puppets, that we make these mistakes in this most difficult part of the universe to live in, so that God can be grown here through us, but not stamped upon us or forced upon us or determined on us. The only thing that's determined is the overall system. But on an individual level, each of us is an individual. Each of us is connected to a soul. And each of us can become uniquely more of our own creator, growing it in us and other, all other life, if we choose to do so. That's what's so critical about humans. Humans change the entire equation. Everybody I've talked to, most people I've talked to, have told me that humans are doing this bad or that bad, or you know that we have a lot of problems. And that we may destroy this world. That's all true. But I'll tell you something else. No world that is physical, that is dense physical as this world, can survive very long. When I say very long, I'm talking about beyond the point where humans started in this world, and continue past that point without humanity. Because the system of evolution itself is self-destructive over time, because it can't grow more of its creator beyond the third part of the creator itself. What are the other two parts together? They're called spirit. The unfortunate problem with evolution is that it grows form much better than it grows spirit. Spirit grows in a minute way in comparison to form because no animal is conscious enough to be able to take charge and choose to grow its spirit. Humans can. That's so critical to understand. Without us, it's all over after we would have been here at the time we were supposed to come in. If for some reason we didn't, or if we stop existing now, the world is doomed to fail. Yes, it may go on developing life for many thousands, even a million years, but ultimately the planet will fail without humans. Humans are necessary because they grow spirit as much or more than they grow form. And they're capable of doing this because they are designed to be. They're the first stage in life that is able to do this. They aren't the only stage. I don't want you to think that the humans are the top of this pyramid. Rather, they are about in the middle, and the top is really beings way beyond humans that have mastered the three lower worlds and sometimes beyond that, that have senses that go far beyond anything I've said, and that are much more integrated in terms of the way that they exist. They're much more inclusive. They are true spiritual beings, and we are kind of just learning that. We're kind of like just getting that whole piece of the puzzle together. But nonetheless, we are critical. We are the greatest of all variation of life that presently exists in any significant number on Earth. There are a few beings that exist on Earth that are beyond human, but the numbers are way too small to have much of an impact at this time. So we are it. We are the pinnacle on Earth at this time. We will change ourselves into something greater in the future. It may take many thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of years or longer, but we will change ourselves, or we will perish along with our planet, because that's how it functions. That's how it works. I know it may sound maybe a little cruel, but not all planets continue to exist. We, I hope, will. It's up to us if we want to. Now, I want to give a little bit of information about what's going on. This Sunday, if you happen to be in the northeastern part of the United States, you can tune in to 1170 a.m. in or around anywhere in Massachusetts and other parts I hear as well, and listen to my show WDISAM radio. That's it. I got it. Okay. You can listen to the show Understanding Ghosts from 1 to 2 p.m. if you're in Pacific time, or if you're on the East Coast, from 4 to 5 Eastern Standard Time. And if you aren't in that area, you can still listen to the show on Internet radio by going to WDISAM.com at those times, and I'll be on. Yeah, you can listen to me talking about understanding ghosts. Also, if you're in the Phoenix area and you happen to be, would like to stop by, one of the members of the spiritual group I'm part of will be speaking over at Glendale Borders on the Rays, which we talked about some tonight. So if you'd like to know more about that, stop in at 7 p.m. on December 3rd, which is this coming Monday, from 7 to 8:15. Yeah, and you can participate. Questions, answers, speaking, all that stuff. And I will occasionally show up at these as well, but for right now, because of my scheduling, we're going to have other members of Ageless Wisdom Distributors, is the name of the group, who are going to be talking. So, to sum up tonight's show very quickly, got about a minute or two here to do that. If we look at the whole process of how life becomes varied and grows and changes, it's really a design. It's not some random, chaotic, forceful issue dealing with evolution. Evolution is a tool, no different than any tool you might think of that you can come into and use to help life that is less than human beings to grow. But it is a tool that has limitations, and it comes with some very big ones. Human beings are beyond those limitations if they choose to be, and they can grow themselves to use an even greater tool. It's called spirit and souls, and It's called Living in a Way That Helps to Grow Their Own Creator in a Conscious Fashion. Human beings have that great ability. And it's something to think about. Until next week. And this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.